Hi, thanks for listening to one of our Sunday talks from the Center for Spiritual Living in Midtown Atlanta. If this is your first time listening to one of our talks, we certainly hope you enjoy it. But if you're a regular listener to our podcast, we would like you to consider contributing to our center. It's easy to do. All you have to do is go on our website, and it's easy to find the button and make a contribution. That will allow us to continue bringing these talks to you on a regular basis in the future. Once again, thanks for listening.
I'm going to talk about Mother's Day next week, which it is. Remember that, or you're in trouble. Okay. The title of my talk this morning, as Doug said, is This Is Your Wake-Up Call. And I decided if I was going to talk about waking up, first I'm going to have to talk about sleep. Right? Makes perfect sense. And I always consider Sunday morning a perfect time to talk about sleep because that's the time when many people struggle with that great spiritual question, should I go to church this morning or should I stay at home and pray to St. Mattress, as we used to say. And that's always a tough question, especially when Sunday's the only morning you can sleep in. And I know for a lot of you that's true. I'm glad to see you guys made the right decision. Anyway, sleep is one of life's greatest pleasures. And it's also one of life's greatest necessities. Now, we sleep for a lot of different reasons. We obviously sleep when we're tired. If we get deprived of sleep for more than 24 hours, we start hallucinating and our body starts to go to sleep without our permission. But there are other reasons that we sleep besides that. There are a lot of people who sleep out of habit just because the clock says it's bedtime, even if they're not really tired. I did that for a while. I used to go to sleep right after Johnny Carson's monologue, you know, for most of the time during the week. I once heard someone say that most people spend their lives going to bed when they're not tired, not sleepy, and getting up when they are, which is kind of interesting. Now, we also sleep to rejuvenate our bodies and to get our beauty sleep, which is why you guys could be here, because you don't need beauty sleep, because you're so gorgeous, okay? Now, some people sleep to escape, whether it's to escape their problems or to escape their thoughts. But if we'd rather sleep than be awake, it's a pretty clear sign that our life is not very interesting, is the way I look at it. I had a friend of mine years ago who liked to party hard every night. I mean, every night, and party really hard. And then he'd get up early to play golf or to go skiing or to make money at this job he loved where he made a lot of money. And he used to say when people asked him about it, he said, you can sleep when you're dead because you're going to be dead a long time. So I always thought those were great words of wisdom. Now, we used to think that when we slept, our body was just resting by doing nothing. But the researchers, sleep research has really become advanced, have discovered in recent years that during sleep, a lot more is going on than we thought, both with our body and with our mind. We know that while we sleep, our body continues to do a lot of things automatically. Our heart beats, our food digests, our fingernails and toenails grow, our hair grows, all that. All the stuff that we have no conscious control over keeps on working. It's just the stuff that we do have conscious control over that slows down or stops, like walking or talking, except for sleepwalking or sleep talking, which is something else entirely. Now, when we sleep, we don't read, we don't eat. We basically turn control of our body over to the subconscious part of our mind. That's what the psychologists tell us, because that's what's really, really busy when we're sleeping. In fact, we have a very difficult time even getting to sleep until we let go of all the conscious stuff that's spinning around in our brain, right? I mean, frequently, I'll lay there at night, tired and everything, but I got so much stuff buzzing around in there, okay? Now, whenever we can't get to sleep, it's not because we're relaxed, too relaxed, or not worried, whatever. It's because our mind won't shut up. A lot of us have that issue. We've got these gremlins dancing around in our head, and I don't know about your gremlins, but my gremlins have a number of things they like to do, like worrying or arguing or making lists. That's a big one. They're really good at that. And we can't seem to calm these thoughts down. Maybe we're worried about something that happened during that day, or maybe we're worried about something that may or may not be happening tomorrow. It isn't until we finally decide to count sheep or read a book, or my own personal favorite, recite the alphabet backwards over and over and over again. I've done it for you before, but I won't spoil you by doing it again. All right? Or maybe warm milk, glass of wine, whatever it is. It isn't until we do something like that to calm our mind down that we're able to slide off into what they call Never Never Land. But even when we do fall asleep, we often tend to drag the doubts and the fears of the day right into bed to us. And that's where our nightmares and our dreams all come from. There was a famous psychologist, when I was reading about this, he had written a book about a number of his patients, and he had one of his clients who was a 9-year-old child who started having these terrible nightmares about being chased by monsters. Pretty normal for a 9-year-old. I mean, a lot of kids have that. And she'd wake up screaming in the middle of the night a few times a week, and her parents brought her into this psychiatrist. And in therapy, he asked the child what the monsters looked like. And you know what she said? I don't know. I'm always running away from them. I don't know what they look like, okay? I'm too busy, all right? So the doctor convinced her, however he did it, that the next time she had this dream, to try to remember to stop and turn around. So she finally did, very bright 9-year-old, one night, and when she finally turned around and saw them, she saw that the terrible monsters she'd been running away from were these cartoon figures who stopped as soon as she turned around, and they wouldn't come any closer. And she stepped up to them, and she blew on them one at a time, and they just dissolved into particles and blew away. That's how she described it, and she never had the nightmare again. Now, that's actually what most of our nightmares are. Our nightmares are simply false fears that we are afraid to confront. And when we finally decide to turn around and confront them, they disappear, kind of like a cockroach when you turn on the kitchen light, all right? Now, Dr. Holmes wrote this in The Science of Mind, and Dr. Ernest Holmes was the founder of this teaching, if you're new here. He said, "Our dreams are mental patterns that can lead us into a fuller or richer life, or can create monsters that make our lives a nightmare, whether we are awake or asleep," which gets into what we're talking about. He used to tell a story, Dr. Holmes did, about a man who had this repeat nightmare that there was a horrible demon that appeared in the middle of the night at the foot of his bed, and he'd pull the blanket up to his chin, and he said, "What are you going to do with me?" And the demon said, "I don't know. What are you going to do with me? It's your dream." So, which is a great story. Now, someone once said that dreaming, I love this, permits each and every one of us to be quietly and safely insane every night of our lives. Which is very, somebody has great dreams back there, okay? In a way, you know, that's very true. When we're asleep, our mind is free of all the restrictions and all the rules and all the logic that we give into with our conscious mind. Automatically, we've been indoctrinated into that when we're awake. So when we're asleep, that internal judge, that critic, that mom watching you, or your dad wagging his finger at you, all that stuff, that never seems to leave us alone, is taken out of the picture. So what comes into our dreams is actually uncensored, which means our dreams are more open and more honest because they don't have the consequences that our daily lives have. So in our dreams, our mind can try things on without worrying about who's going to find out. We can get even with anybody. We can do anything to anybody we're angry at in our dreams. We can sleep with anybody. That's one thing. We can be strong. We can be brilliant. We can be bulletproof. We can be popular, rich, and successful in our dreams, even though we may not be so much during the day. Or we can be helpless and afraid and not be able to do anything about it. In our dreams, we can even go beyond our physical limitations. Did anybody ever see the movie with Javier Bardem playing The Sea Inside? Fabulous movie. I write it down if you got a piece of paper. I've seen it 5 or 6 times. And it's Spanish with subtitles, but it's about a sailor who in his 20s was swimming at his home, and the waves went out and he hit it and he was a quadriplegic. But the part about this that's interesting, and they have some beautiful scenery in here, is when he went to sleep, he could fly. And he could see where he was flying, and he flew to the, you know, to the beach and flew around cities and all that. And it's really, really a beautiful situation. So in dreams, our body isn't controlled by the laws of physics or the laws of society. It isn't subject to the limits of space and time. In dreams, what we are is pure thought going wherever it wants to go and doing whatever it can imagine itself doing. That's why we often wake up with a perspective on a problem that's very different from the perspective we had when we went to sleep. Anybody ever have that happen? You're thinking of something at night, and you wake up in the middle of the night frequently, and you write it down, or you wake up in the morning and you remember it. There were a lot of great scientific discoveries, I don't know if the pool noodle was one of them, but it might have been, who knows, that popped into somebody's mind after a nice 1-hour nap. It's very true. All right. In fact, a lot of the great inventors and painters and artists, Einstein, Edison, Darwin, Galileo, all of these different people napped a lot. They only slept 3 or 4 hours a night, but they napped 2 or 3 times a day, maybe for 20 minutes, maybe for an hour. Now, there's a good reason why this works. When we're awake, if we're trying to work something out, whether it's a problem at work or a money problem or a relationship problem or whatever it happens to be, what we do when we're awake is we keep running over the same possibilities, the same tapes over and over and over again. Okay, we keep repeating to ourselves the same reasons, the same solutions, the same arguments, the same stuff, all of them based on either logic or past performance or based on conventional ways of thinking, the way everybody else is thinking. So when we're awake, we think in a straight line from our past experiences. I was talking with someone about that earlier. We think in a straight line from our past experiences to the facts that we know now, which limits what we can project into the future. That's the sequence. But when we sleep, our mind works differently. We're not talking about our brain here. We're talking about our mind because we aren't letting our logical brain get in the way. Okay, and what are we not letting it get in the way of? Of the infinite intelligence that works through us as what Dr. Holmes calls the power of mind. In dreams, you see, the past, the present, and the future can get mixed up. It's very, very interesting. Friends from high school, friends from college, and friends from today can all be in the same room together with us in our dreams. Because in dreams, time and space don't mean anything, okay? They don't mean anything. Our inner consciousness can focus on any time or any place, and it can do so at the speed of thought. At the speed of thought. Our subconscious mind can bring any person, living or dead, into our dream. It can give us different tools that we didn't think were available. It can cause us to look at our problem from an entirely different angle. Even if it's something we've been chewing on for a long time or maybe just the day before, it doesn't really matter because there is a part of us, and it's an invisible part, it's a part of our consciousness, not our physical makeup, that is not fooled by the fears and the false ideas that we get stuck in during our normal business days. Because in dreams, this intelligence flowing through us can see past those things. It can see past those things to a greater idea. I mean, whether we know it or not, or whether we use it or not, we all have, as part of our being, an inner wisdom that knows that most of the things that bother us so much are not very important. And it knows this because it knows that we all have within us the power, the intelligence, to solve any problem. Any problem. All right? So, with that as groundwork, okay, with all that being true, let me ask you this. This is where my mind went when I was putting this together. Think of what would happen if we could tap into that ability, that intelligence, that consciousness that's not inhibited by the outside, that deals with this wisdom within us anytime we want it, asleep or awake, all right? There's something incredibly powerful that is always in our consciousness that knows how to find not just solutions, but frequently unique solutions that can show us new possibilities because this intelligence is looking at life at a much broader scale than we normally use. And it can do this because it's not distracted by all those different layers of limitation that we've been collecting all of these different years since we started paying more attention to our exterior than our interior. That's what most of us do. There's something in our consciousness that isn't limited by our logic because it has a logic all its own. It has a logic all its own. You see, the key to being really creative lies in opening up access to that part of our mind that's not limited by what we learn and what we see in the physical world. This is the part of our mind that Dr. Holmes calls the subjective mind, but he also uses the term the mind of God, which is really, really amazing. It's the creative part of our nature. It's the part of our mind, and when I say mind, I don't mean mind with a small m like my mind and your mind. I mean the big M, which is the one mind that we are all an individual part of, okay, that is the same in all of us. No matter what our age, education, nationality, anything else, all right? And this power has some very interesting specific qualities, okay? Now, first, it's infinitely powerful because it can go anywhere and imagine anything. And it is incredibly creative because it's not limited by things. But it has one very significant limitation. It does what it's told. Very interesting, okay? In other words, it accepts as true whatever belief we put into it, consciously or unconsciously. It accepts as true whatever beliefs we put into it, and then it proceeds to create our life and our experiences according to those beliefs. Which means, to use a common computer phrase right now, garbage in, garbage out. Okay? It takes what we put in. Now, you've heard the phrase, we have some nutritionists in here, you are what you eat. Well, as far as our subjective mind is concerned, you are what you think. You are what you believe, is another way of putting it. For example, if we believe that everyone in the world is out to get us, all right, then our subjective mind will attract to us experiences where people keep trying to make us miserable. I've seen it happen many, many times. If we hold the belief that we just can't get ahead financially, then our bank balance is going to reflect those beliefs with a zero or negative amount, whatever it happens to be. Or it may cause us to bring in a lot of money, but to have a lot more going out. It can happen in a lot of different ways. Remember that saying? I know some of you grew up being beat over the head by a Bible. Whatever you ask for in prayer, believe that you have it and it will be yours. A lot of people miss that, but it's a great statement, okay? It goes both ways. Believe that you don't have it and it will not be yours. That's the same thing. Okay? It doesn't say whatever good stuff you ask for, you're going to get. It says whatever you ask for in prayer, all right, will show up. And the way we ask for things spiritually, okay, is by believing it's true. That's how we ask for it. We don't ask God to give it to us. We believe that it is ours, that it is done, and it will be done. That's what that statement means. You see, our beliefs and our imagination are very, very closely intertwined. That's why the stronger we imagine certain outcomes, the more likely we are to think about them, even in our sleep. Even when we're asleep, our unconscious mind accepts what our imagination gives to it as though it were a real experience. It can't differentiate, all right? That's very, very important to understand. There's a story you're familiar with, Emmett Fox, many of you, great minister in New York back in the 30s, whatever. And he used to tell a story about a railroad worker who got locked, and he worked the night shift, and he got locked in a refrigerator car while he was cleaning it. And the next morning, they opened the refrigerator car, and there was his lifeless body, and he had scratched on the wall of the car, "Freezing cold, please help me." Those are the last words he put down. Now, the interesting thing was the refrigeration unit wasn't on. It wasn't on. Now, it was chilly in there. It was probably 50 degrees or something, but it was nowhere near freezing. But he convinced himself, as Emmett Fox says, that he was freezing to death. Now, our subjective mind really is that powerful if our belief is strong enough. Now, the reason this is so important is because it is our inner mind, all right, the inner consciousness, a part of our consciousness that really is made in the image and likeness of God, as we describe God, as we believe God. That is what creates our life. But all of the information that goes into it comes from what we believe, consciously or unconsciously, once again, and because we don't take charge of our thoughts, a lot of what we believe comes from the outside. It comes from out there. So on some level, we choose the facts and the emotions we have in our mind. We choose the fears and the limitations that we accept. And we choose who to listen to and what we believe. That kind of creates a whole package. So instead of using our inner wisdom, our God-given intelligence, if you want to call it that, to consciously decide what we want in our life, and then to direct this powerful creative mind within us to make it so, instead of doing that, we act in our waking hours as if we were hypnotized. Do you ever drive home from work or from someplace and you can't remember having driven home? These places you go by? We do that all the time, okay? We walk around letting the world decide what's true for us, letting other people hand us their beliefs, and we say thank you very much, letting our unhappy past continue without interruption until it becomes our unhappy future. That's how a lot of people live. Even though we're perfectly capable of directing our life wherever we want to go, we don't. We don't, okay? It's like we're in a trance. We're not aware of what we're doing or why we're doing it, but we keep on doing it over and over again. So what we've done is we have somehow gotten things turned around backwards, okay? Our spirit, our true self, seems to be more awake when we're asleep than it is when we're awake. That's how most people are living. You see, for many of us, when we sleep, our mind is moving very quickly, seeing possibilities, overcoming boundaries, traveling through space and time like some superhero. But when we're awake, okay, when we're out in the world, when we're in the traffic, okay, we're sleepwalking. We're sleepwalking, all right? Completely oblivious to the endless possibilities in the world around us or the incredible power within us that's capable of making those possibilities a real part of our life. That's why every great spiritual teacher who ever lived has been telling us over and over again that we need to wake up to life. We do. In fact, the name Buddha, the Buddha, you know what it means? The awakened one. Literally, that's the translation, okay? We need to wake up to our spiritual magnificence. St. Paul said in one of his letters to the Romans, he said, it is high time we wake out of sleep. A great statement. This belief that most people have in a life that is separated from God, from spirit, from the creative power of mind, this belief they have is a dream. And we need to wake up to the truth that it's not so. All right, we need to wake up to the truth that we are basically spiritual beings having a human experience. That's what we are. Now, this is a very powerful idea. In Greek mythology, if you go into it, I thought it was very interesting. The god of sleep is the twin brother of the god of death. Twin brother, okay? Very, very interesting, which means there's a very thin line between being asleep to our true nature and being spiritually dead. That's the way I interpret it. When the teacher Jesus was brought to the home of the child that everyone thought was dead, he looked at her and he said, she's not dead, she's only sleeping. She's only sleeping. And he proceeded to let her up. Now, that's a parable, okay? It's a story, it's a metaphor, whatever. But all these stories tell us that we need to wake up to the greater truth of our being that's a part of our nature and with us all the time. Now, the Eastern philosophies, which I like and many of you have studied, tell us there are three kinds of awakening. All right, let me go through those quickly. Now, first of all, there's the one we're all familiar with, okay, when we wake up from the dreams of ordinary sleep. And that may be the least important of the three because the truth is, even when we wake up from sleep, our mind may still be asleep. It may still be asleep, okay, thinking we're awake. That's the illusion people have. Now, the second kind of awakening is one that many of the mystics talk about, and this is the awakening at death from the dream of life. Very, very beautiful. When we seem to die in this world, that we wake up to something, and this is where we find out whether God is a Baptist or a Catholic or whatever it happens to be, or black or white or male or female or a giant frog or whatever it happens to be. That's when we find that out. But the third kind of awakening is the most significant for us because that's the one we can actually do something about in the here and now. This third kind of awakening is what the master teachers described as awakening into full enlightenment from the dream of delusion. Isn't that beautiful? Awakening into full enlightenment from the dream of delusion. Now, that may sound very mystical, very esoteric, but it's really just the metaphysical way of saying, wake up and smell the coffee. That's what it means, okay? You see, this dream of delusion that they're talking about is not some spiritual curtain that's been pulled over our eyes until we have done certain things for God and God will raise the curtain. If we have a curtain over our eyes blocking the light, I guarantee God didn't put it there, okay? God did not put it there. We did. And we're the only ones who can raise it anytime we want to let in the light that's been there all the time. So this process isn't so much about becoming enlightened, it's simply becoming aware of what is really there. That's what it is. The light is always ready to come in. We're the ones who have been keeping our eyes closed and keeping it out. So what happens when you're in the dark and the light comes on and you open your eyes? At first, what can you see? Nothing. It hurts. You know, you're kind of going like this and you're rubbing your eyes. But once we get used to it, because we're not, once we get used to it, we'll find that we can see far more than we could see before. And the beautiful thing is, spiritually speaking, when you wake up like that, you will never want to go to sleep again. Ever, ever, ever. That's why people who come to this teaching for a while and finally decide, you know, I want to go back to being a Catholic. I want to go back to being a Baptist. And then they show up about a month later and said, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. You know, you ruined me. All right. You know, there's a wonderful story. I want to kind of finish up. It's a little long story, but bear with me. It's almost a meditation if you want to close your eyes, but just think of this story. All right. And the version I love the most is a Sufi version. I've read about it in a number of different teachings. Sufi is the mystical aspect of Islam. So let me present it to you this way. Imagine this. Imagine that you are a being of energy, pure energy, who came to Earth. Someone who had traveled the entire universe and understood the power and the beauty of life at every level of reality. And for whatever reason, you decide that you want to stop a while and experience life here on this planet to see if you can learn to understand this strange species of being. But in order to do that, you have to take a physical form. You have to be born as a human and grow into an adult. So you do. Now, as time passes and you grow through the years, time means nothing to you as a being of energy, you become more and more adapted to your new world. You become more and more conditioned. So you start to work hard after school is done. You fall in love. You start a family. You develop friendships. And eventually, as the years go by, you start to forget about your former life. Now, things go fine for a while. You get up, you go to work, you do stuff on weekends, whatever. And then something happens that really shakes up your life. Maybe it's an illness of one of your children. Maybe it's a death of one of your parents or a spouse, whatever it is. And at that point, your life starts to feel a little out of control, a little crazy, a little exhausting and unfulfilling. And you start thinking that there has to be something better. And you start looking for an answer, but you don't know where to look, all right? You don't know what you're looking for. That's part of the problem. But you start to feel, as you search, more connected with different parts of life. And then one day, either in a dream or something happens, and in a flash like that, everything comes back to you. You remember who you really are and what you really are and how big and beautiful the universe is. And you start to look at this life that you're still in totally differently. Totally differently. Problems don't seem so difficult. People are easier to forgive. Anything seems possible. Even though your current world, your current life hasn't changed and your surroundings haven't changed, your awareness has changed. Your awareness has changed. And you don't feel powerless anymore. That's what it feels like to wake up spiritually, okay? I mean, imagine what it would be like if you were awake but everyone else in the world was walking around in their sleep. Imagine what that would be like, bumping into walls, running into each other, whatever. They don't know you can see because they can't see and they're asleep and you couldn't communicate with anyone. This is probably what the great spiritual teachers felt like, all of them who were there, okay? They weren't showing off their deep spiritual wisdom. They were just going around shaking everybody. Wake up, okay? Telling them that all they had to do was wake up and look at what was here. Look at what was in here, in them, okay? And a few people woke up. A few did. Most of us didn't. You see, spiritual awakening is simply a matter of shifting our perspective until we can finally see meaning where we couldn't see it before. Where we couldn't see it before. It's sort of a matter of changing our focus, our spiritual essence. We start to become aware of it because that spiritual essence in us did not come out of nowhere. It didn't. We were born with it. We had it before we were born into this world. We are a divine idea. We are, let's get that through your head. We are a divine idea, and a divine idea, by definition, has to be perfect. It has to be perfect. Even though there's something in us that knows this, our outer intellect, okay, confused by the world of appearances that's swirling around us, refuses to understand or accept our nature. That's what that outer brain does. In fact, it tries to protect us from it. It tries to keep us asleep and protect us from waking up. But if we can somehow acknowledge, okay, and accept and embody this inner perfection, it will start to open itself more and more and more. As we start to wake up to life, our body and our relationships and our prosperity and all the different parts of our life will start to move in harmony with the truth. They will start to move in greater harmony. You see, we're not creating this perfection because it's always been there. We're just waking up to it. We're just waking up to it. It is our God nature unfolding. Unfolding. Dr. Holmes wrote this. He said, "This awakening is a process of evolution, a little here and a little there, until the whole eye is opened and we see that life is neither separate from God nor different from our good." Nor different from our good. All growth, okay, whether it's the evolution of a species or the evolution of consciousness in the individual, is simply the power of life awakening to a greater possibility. Okay, all growth is simply a healing that brings our physical and our emotional self together with our spiritual self, which is exactly the way it's supposed to be, because that's what makes us complete. It makes us complete. And that's really what most of us are looking for on this spiritual path, this spiritual search where we're on. We want to feel complete, which is different from feeling finished. Okay? Those are two different things. So all we have to do now is to wake up and claim this connection, this completeness for our own. For our own. Because it really is ours. It always has been. It always will be. And nothing in the world can take it away. Anyway, this is the truth in your life, and this is the truth in mine. And so it is. And so it is. Thank you. All right. Okay, let's take a moment, if you will. Beautiful music surrounding us, beautiful surroundings, wonderful open minds of so many people here. We're sharing these ideas, this community, with like minds. Recognizing God is not something we see or something we find. It is truly what we are. This one mind, this intelligence that permeates every cell of every atom in the universe and every cell of our body is a part of our nature. So as we begin to turn away in consciousness from the illusions around us, our mind begins to see through our sacred eye. When we turn away from the world, we do not leave the world, but now we are in the world, but not of it. We are looking at the world from a greater perspective, seeing the anger and the hatred and the fear and all these things that cause so many problems in the physical world as simply a lack of understanding, as simply battles between different people who are asleep to who they really are, who others are, and who God is. So as we see this, instead of seeing the problems, we begin to see solutions. And if we can't see the solution, we see the possibility of a solution, knowing that the infinite mind has already provided it. So in this way, we create in our own life loving relationships, prosperity that we can use to support ourselves and others in greater ways, physical healing when we need it, great loving relationships with our friends, neighbors, and family. And on a larger scale, we create wonderful opportunities for our community, for our neighborhood, for our city, our country, and the planet. Each one of us does this as an individual, But as an individual, we are one with the one. So all of us are capable of doing this. We're not fighting against others who do not think this way. We are recognizing that they're asleep. And as we awaken ourselves and attract to us others who are awake, those who are asleep slowly awaken themselves. And as the tipping point happens, where more of the world is awake than asleep, we will begin to transform this world into the paradise that it's meant to be. So this is the power we have simply by opening our eyes. We accept this truth for ourselves because we know it at our deepest level. We embrace it. We embody ideas that support this way of thinking. And as we do so, we begin to see our lives transformed and the world transformed around us. I give thanks for this awareness. I have thanks for all that I have been given, all the gifts of inner wisdom and inner intelligence. I now accept them for what they are. And I give thanks for all that I have yet to give, sharing these ideas with others. With this truth held firmly in my consciousness, with this belief now a part of my being, I begin to move forward into my life, creating greater things than I have ever created before. This is my truth. I accept it, and I release it to let it do its good and perfect work. Please join me in saying, and so it is.